Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast. Welcome, Mash. And you're one of these really hard people to introduce because you're a founder and CEO of various different things at the same time. So I'm gonna let you just introduce yourself in terms of the range of things that you're building just now and how you got to be in the position of building those.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. So I'm Mash Ponigala. I am a brand strategist at core, but I've been a serial entrepreneur for a very long time. So I've launched over a dozen different businesses. I mentor founders. I work with startups to secure funding. I'm part of a syndicate of angel investors, and we do sort of work with founders to try and get them funding. But at the end of the day, my primary love is brand strategy. And I build an agency around it. I sort of work with founders and the top management to try and figure out brand strategy, positioning, and so on and so forth.
Interesting, because it's not always the case that people who come from a brand strategy passion become founders. Do you recognize that as a kind of unusual skill set or an unusual drive?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started out with building businesses. So it was the agency that I built first, and I come from a software developer background, and that was in a different life. I started out as a developer, then became a project manager, a project leader, and was leading teams developing software. We were working with highly sensitive kind of software. So I wanted to take a break from the software world, and I always loved branding. So my first investment was in a very tiny one-person branding agency with a partner. And later on, I grew that to $1 million business, 5 studios around the world. So brand identity, we started with visual, of course, as every agency starts on the visual side of things. But slowly, I found that I was actually providing a lot of strategy as a part of identity building. And I found that, number one, I was passionate about it. Number two, I was pretty good at it. So I then left the visual side to my partner, to the teams, and I was focusing more on just providing strategy. And as I provided strategy, I was working with founders, I was working with companies providing strategy. Some of them caught my attention, and I wanted to be a part of those strategies. And that's when I was thinking, okay, hang on, I'll provide strategy, but also I would like to invest in your business. And the first one was this lady based out of Dubai, and she was a fashion designer, and I created the strategy for her. It was a fantastic strategy, and the business grew, and I wanted to also invest, become part of it. And later on, that tiny business was acquired by a huge Saudi conglomerate, and that gave me the idea that I was this super investor. And so I said, this is what I'm going to do. And of course, I burned my fingers right after that because you don't become an investor straight away, right? So anyway, to cut the long story short, that's how I came into being an investor and then to becoming a mentor and founder. So it's a very complicated yet progressive kind of move from software development, visual strategy, and then, of course, into startups. But what I realize now is underlying everything is strategy.
So let's pick up on that, though, because sometimes strategy or people who enjoy strategy can quite often find it more challenging when it heads into the steps and the kind of graft of building a company or building a brand in different ways. So is that something you think you just had a different perspective on, given your sort of software background or just the hard yards of having done it in different spaces? Or do you think that strategists sometimes misunderstand what the goal or the task really is?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that question because that has been on the top of my mind for a very long time, and I'm seeing a little bit of a change online right now, but strategy is a word that's just thrown around for everything, right? So everyone is a brand strategist these days, and everything is strategy. Even having a cup of coffee has become strategy. Let us strategize to have a cup of coffee. You know, but I'm not saying that I know the right meaning of strategy, but probably one of the deeper meanings of strategy is really finding the options to position a brand, right? So that's strategy. It's not marketing. It's definitely not sales. Sales and marketing are their own kind of paths. And strategy just provides these options so that you can position your brand to that end goal. And whatever that end goal is, and it's usually, of course, you know, scaling and making money. But if it is, for example, a charity, they have a strategy. Probably not, yes, of course, money comes into play, but they may have a different goal, but it is still finding that option. So for me, I guess, building businesses, I've had 4 successful exits. I've built over a dozen different businesses. Not all of them successful, of course, as you can imagine. You never have a 100% success rate. In fact, 50% is a lot for me, 25%. But also having worked with a lot of founders, helping, advising them, creating strategy for them, what I recognized is that positioning is the key for everything. And when a business succeeds, it's usually because of the right kind of positioning. Mm-hmm. If a business does not succeed, it's usually because they're failing at positioning.
Okay, I can see that. But the question that follows up from that is, do you get a sense really early when you're working with someone new around what the positioning needs to be and then you just execute? Or are you kind of learning as you start to see it and go out into the world?
Yeah, I go straight for the jugular right away. Any project that I take on, any client I work with, or even a venture that I want to invest in, I look for the current positioning, where the puck needs to be,
okay,
where it's going to be. Because if you're creating strategies for the moment, that's tactics. You need to create positioning for the future. That means that you need to be looking at the market trends. You need to be looking at consumer kind of perceptions. How are they changing? Where are they going to be? And of course, you can't always predict with 100% accuracy, but if you turn this into a science rather than an art, then you have a higher potential to say, okay, this is where the market is ending. This is where you are positioning yourself or have positioned yourself in the past. And now you want to ramp up, you want to scale up. If you continue with this positioning, then you're going to have these issues. So that's the kind of mindset that I come into any project.
Okay, interesting. So tell me around how that works in practice in terms of when you're taking on a role within these different businesses, how do you kind of manage that day to day? Because you've got the kind of big long-term goal. Everyone around you is focused inevitably to some degree on some of the tactics still, because there's still like a quarterly plan to get to, or there's big goals that are going on. How do you operate yourself in that kind of context?
If you're looking at the core essence of positioning, and if you're trying to figure out, okay, your audience at the moment, are they being communicated to based on an older strategy or framework? Or are you being proactive in the communication? That tells me exactly where the bottleneck is. And like I said at the beginning, strategy is not about, you know, going off to the mountain and then coming down with some tablets, thou shall not. No, it's very engaging. It's very iterative process. You have to work with all components, the sales component, the marketing component, the customer service. And of course, at the core of it is the product, right? Where is the quality level? Because you could have the greatest strategy in place, but if your product does not stand up, you're not going to have success. So looking at the quality and the vision, do they match? Are they aligning? What is the customer perspective in terms of the quality that they're looking for? And where is this? It's a dynamic piece.
Okay. That's interesting. And that speaks to another point. So, you know, one of the reasons we set up Label Sessions was we want people to get advice from people who've actually been there and done things for real, rather than necessarily even written the book about it, but, you know, got models for it. Are you conscious that as you've gone through your experience of scaling businesses, that you've learned things? Are there things that you know now you didn't know at the start, or have you always had a kind of intuitive sense for how to position brands and how to make that work?
I think at the moment, it's slightly on the intuitive side, but of course, it was not like that. In fact, one of my businesses, my agency, by 2012, we were a successful agency. We were, in fact, one of the first online kind of logo design, branding design kind of companies. Going back to 1998, 2000, we came online and all. But 2012, we had a massive, massive setback. So we had all our eggs in Google's basket. And then there was a major update, and we were one of the companies. There was a lot of collateral damage, and we were one of the companies affected by that. And overnight, we went from $1 million ARR, million plus, to $5,000 ARR. And I had to fire over 50 people in the span of 2 weeks. And of course, we didn't straight away fire people. As you can imagine, we tried to work with Google to say, listen, we've been caught up in this collateral damage. What can we do, right? While that was happening, we held out for about 8 months. We used all the buffer, we used the savings, we used everything up because we thought, you know, we're going to come back. And it did not happen. So the day came when, you know, we couldn't literally pay salaries. And these teams were people that I worked with for forever, right? Mm-hmm. For ages. We were almost like family. And then, cut the long story short, we did that. And I almost sort of had a breakdown, but, you know, I went to, my wife put me on a flight to Kyoto. I was already practicing a bit of, you know, meditation and Zen. But anyway, so I'm going to digress there. But I came back with a resolution that I'm going to build this brand back up. And I did. 2016 hit $1 million again. So that's 4 years, about three years. We hired 75% of the original staff and another 10% new staff, of course. So that, I think, those three and a half years really taught me what happens to a business when it is successful because of, I wouldn't say luck, but factors just happen. You were at the right time, at the right place, and things worked out. And then what happens when you have to replicate that against adversity? And when you have to replicate that against adversity, it is your strategy that really has to really come up. And I guess that's where it was my crucible. It was my furnace that, you know, imagine if it's a samurai sword being hammered and, you know, folded and hammered. So I think that's where I learned a lot about myself, about what true strategy really means, mm-hmm. how the audience and figuring them out is so important, and a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
And so from 2016, 2017, 18, we were doing really well. Again, 2020, the pandemic was another opportunity for me because every business was affected. We pivoted quickly, and I was also working with other businesses. I had other businesses that I was running, and all these lessons enabled me to really not have another tragedy, so to speak. So it is intuitive now, but I've learned it the very hard way. It's not just theory. It's from practical on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. So it's also interesting as well, listening to you speak there, because in a sense, it's very much not luck, as you were saying before, but it is positioning. You kind of learn positioning through the furnace of both the having it right and having it wrong for a period, and how you kind of reorient things afterwards.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting. So you've made this. So there's a couple of unusual leaps you've made. So software development into branding, brand strategist into being a founder, and then from that into being an investor. So it's that's not everyone makes those jumps. And I guess you've really lived all aspects of the founder life. So as you are starting to see leaders come to you as founders or people who are leading new products and new ventures in different ways, what are some of the things that you look for to predict that they're going to be a success?
It's probably a cliche by now, but the biggest thing I look for is really the big picture. Not just the founder, but even the business, because sometimes you have founders who do understand the big picture, but they may have partners or top-level management that does not. And there is already a conflict that may not be on the table It is under the table, but it's going to affect the success of the company. So when I say the big picture, yes, of course, the vision and mission, the usual things, but beyond that, what does it mean? What does this brand mean to them and to the world? Because that's the two sides of the coin. A lot of people just look at one side. What does it mean to them? Which is okay. It works. It works a lot of times, but it is not the full picture. Or sometimes you have founders, you have companies that only look at the big picture from the world's perspective, which then creates cultural issues, and eventually it's going to snowball into failure, if I may use the word. So for me, I'm trying to gauge where is either the business or the founder, where are they on this spectrum? And being at five in the middle is perfect balance. Now, not everyone is at five all the time. You know, people yo-yo. Sometimes when they're starting out, it's passion. It's from their perspective. I'm going to change the world. This is the great idea I have. And then as the business matures and you have scaling happening, maybe even an exit happening, then they're probably actually veering towards the world because that is what is expected from them, right? But working towards that balance is what I usually look for.
Okay, interesting. This is an unfair question, but do you think Mash the investor would always have backed Mash the founder at each stage in your journey or only at a certain point?
Yeah, well, I mean, it used to be 3, 4, 5 years ago. I was more of a founder. And okay. In fact, I started a network called Founderama because I wanted to really help founders. And even I do that even today. I do some pro bono mentoring and things like that. But anyway, I used to be that founder, biased towards the founder. But then as I invested, as I had losses and successes and successful seven-figure exits, what I then came to realize was that you need to have both, right? Because investors and VCs and, you know, all that, they have their own perspective on where this business needs to be, how it needs to be scaled, the rate at which it needs to be scaled. And there's also on the founder side of things, what is good for the business, right? Because sometimes aggressive scaling without the right kind of perspective, without the right positioning, mm-hmm. it's going to lead to failure. It's going to lead to burnout. It's going to lead to diminished returns, and scaling might go up. It becomes a bell curve where you hit a particular point and then you start accelerating downwards. So to answer your question, right now, one of the things that I really work hard on myself is really to find that balance between Mash the founder, Mash the investor, Mash the matchmaker, because I'm part of a syndicate and I enable investments. I don't invest all the time myself. I'm a small-time angel investor. I run a fund that is almost capped now. So yeah, finding that balance is one of the things that I work on.
Okay, interesting. And then in amongst all of these things, you mentioned there the mentoring. How come you feel a motivation to do that? I mean, is that something you actually kind of enjoy doing? What is it you get from being a mentor?
I feel that at heart, I'm an advisor. I wouldn't like to call that a teacher. Maybe the word sensei is good. Not the Hollywood version of it, but the true. A sensei is never, they don't teach you things. They actually just liberate what's already inside you. So that's what I tell my clients also when we're working on a strategy. I say, listen, I'm not going to come up with something that is not already there. It's almost uncovering of it. And so mentoring for me is really where I thrive. I enjoy it. To help someone see a different perspective, to help someone really get that epiphany, not because I know so much about it, but because I'm able to try and help them figure it out. I think that I enjoy that a lot.
Interesting. So I'm not going to liberate what's inside you necessarily, but we've got a few rapid questions just to finish things up to get to know a bit you beyond some of the work conversations.
Sure.
So just a few quick fire ones. Let's just head in. What is something you cannot live without?
Cannot live without is that annual 2 or 3 road trips with my wife that we have been working on for the last 3, 4 years. My whole life is centered around that. I cannot live without that.
And what is your music taste like?
Music. It's all over the place. It depends on the context. It could be, intense classical music when I'm doing deep strategy, deep thinking, deep work, to Eminem when I'm feeling really, you know, I need to let
good.
Loose.
I can see both sides of your personality in this conversation. That's good. It's interesting, this one for you. Do you have a work routine?
Not really, no. I used to, but these days, no. I do have a life routine, of course. You know, I start with meditation and I end the day with meditation. And in between, okay. It's really fluid.
What makes someone a good traveling companion for you?
Someone who is willing to experiment local cultures. And that's why I and my wife, we enjoy road trips, because my wife and I, when we go anywhere, we want to embrace the culture. So it's not like we're not looking for the nearest McDonald's. Instead, we're saying, is this a bug? Do I need to eat this? Is it important to you? Okay, let's give it a try.
Two last ones. What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Ah, that's a tough one. I've had lots of mentors. But the best one, I think, is really work towards knowing yourself. That's the most critical thing for anyone. You know, work towards knowing yourself, because most of the challenges you face, both the successes and failures, is because of your inability to know yourself.
The last one, some people hate, some people love. But on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you, Matt?
Weird? In what context? I mean, there's different kinds of weird. But let's say in business context, I'd say I'm up there. 7, 8, maybe.
Good. That's really nice. That's the way we end things up. That's really nice. Really interesting. So, as we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.